Welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. Glad you could join me. We've got a fascinating discussion coming up from the floor of Pheasant Fest in Sioux Falls. Got to talk to a lot of good friends and some real experts in their field, and I think you'll enjoy this one, especially if you're a subscriber to Gundog Magazine. Callie Parmley, the editor-in-chief of Gundog Magazine, joins me from Pheasant Fest. We will talk about a lot of topics, from making a TV show, something we both have in common, to hunting strategies and even a little bit of dog care and training advice. It's all coming up right here on the Upland Nation podcast. And for those of you looking towards next season already, if you're looking for a walk-in hunting location, a destination, if you will, I've got a suggestion in Western Kansas where I've had a heck of a good time. And then you will share your thoughts on your most exotic hunting spots. I think you'll be surprised and amused at some of the stories we get out of that one. So stick around. It's all made possible by Hi-Vis Shooting Systems, LandTrust.com, ESPAmerica.com. ProPlansport.com, MidwayUSA.com, TrueLockChokes.com, MidValleyClays.com, PointerShotguns.com, and SageAndBreaker.com. Well, I don't know about you, but over here, we're still trying to get back into shape. Yeah, had a lot of setbacks, still dealing with I think I'm allergic to Central Oregon. Yeah, at least that's all the doctor says it is an allergy. So hopefully I'll get over it. Flick has no problems with that. He has problems with his owner getting sick. So we're working on conditioning, you know, longer runs, steeper climbs, and even getting the pigeons back in shape. A lot of them. I don't know about you. If you keep pigeons, I'm curious. Have you seen an uptick in the number of pigeons? I mean, are they reproducing at a higher rate than average? Mine sure are, and I guess I should knock wood. Be grateful for that. You, on the other hand, are relating some incredible stories about where you've been over the years while hunting, and I think that's kind of fun and inspirational, you know, or aspirational, maybe that was the way to put it. So I asked on the social media pages, what's the most exotic place you've hunted? sea ducks and brant on the New England coast for Steve Selvig. Yeah, well, not perfect Upland Nation topics, but still kind of cool, I'm sure, and probably cold, not cool. Sunrise at a favorite slough-filled beaver pond. Troy Hurdy won't show us the spot on the map, but he says it's along the South Platte. Beautiful. Pheasants and quail for decades out that area. David Kuritsky, I think I know that spot. Thank you very much. It looks like chukar territory. It could be just about anywhere, but based on the rock formations, it might be a place I've been a few times. So thanks for sharing that. Hugh Snyder says he got permission to hunt several old homesteads in North Dakota, full of birds that cooperated. And he tried to imagine the families that grew up there before the pheasants made it their home. Yeah, there's a lot of history out there, and I sure love that kind of stuff as well. Jim Yearns has been to Cordoba, Argentina for doves. David DeSmither, ptarmigan above the Arctic Circle in Alaska. Yow! Let's see. Idaho Mountains with my pups, that's Travis Power's most exotic location, and yes, there is a lot to be said for it. Izmir, Turkey, Vic Sands, I wonder what you are hunting out there. I know some of our birds actually come from there, so I wouldn't be surprised, but I bet there's some really interesting ones as well. Cork Green, Tonto National Forest for quail. Okay, yeah, oh wow, cool. Old stagecoach trail where the ruts were still visible. Yeah, listen, everybody. Can you, like Cork, still hear the quail in the creosote bushes in Palo Verde? Boy, I haven't seen that term for a plant in a long time. I remember digging a lot of that stuff out in my landscaping days. Lance Larson, you're always making us jealous in one way or another. This is, you weren't hunting them, I know, everybody, but a tortoise in Africa, Eastern Cape, South Africa. Wow, beautiful. And as many folks have told me over the years, Africa is a life-changing experience. Yeah, I can't wait. Maybe somebody will bring me over there at some point. Hey, thanks for all your contributions. Some great stuff there, and always inspirational as well. We're brought to you in part by PointerShotguns.com. If you are, like my buddy, shopping for a grandson, looking for a gun that will fit him at age 10, well, they got some youth over and under models that might do the job for you at PointerShotguns.com. You know, 7-year warranty always helps. A little bit of everything in the way of choices, from configurations, side-by-side, over and under, semi-automatic, and colors. If you are like me, attracted to bright, shiny objects with a little color to them, they've got it. Cerakote colorings of various sorts, nickel, of course, bluing, traditional, little bit of everything, including case hardened, case colored. It's all available at PointerShotguns.com. And you know, a lot of the initial information that ProPlanSport.com, you know, the ProPlan dog food guys, they get most of their good information at one point or another from the pros in the field that work with them on a regular basis. I get to talk with them periodically. And just had a great conversation with one at breakfast a couple weeks ago. This stuff is the real deal. You know, there's a lot to be said for all the science and all the research that's done. And of course, Purina does that more than anybody else. But ultimately, it's all got to work in the field. And that's why when you go to an event and there's a Purina ProPlan booth, it's full of people on the other side of the counter. These are the folks who are testing products, developing new products, seeing how they work, and interpreting all of that stuff for us. So learn more at ProPlanSport.com. Find a formulation that works for you. And tell them I sent you, ProPlanSport.com. Back to the floor of the Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I don't know how to describe her. She's my boss sometimes. She's my friend, and someday she'll be my hunting partner. Callie Parmley is the editor-in-chief at Gundog Magazine, among other things. Callie, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Am I doing okay?
You're doing all right.
Okay,
you're
all right, guy. All right, good. I love writing for you.
I love you writing for me.
Thank you. It is the most fun, and it seems like at least once a day I say to somebody, well, I wrote this piece for Callie that's all about this, and then I give him the lecture. You know, I should just carry the copy and read it to him.
Pass it out to him.
Yeah. How's the show going for you so far?
This has been a fantastic show. This is one of my favorite shows. I mean, I always tell people this is our people, right? This is our passions, and everyone here loves the same thing, bird dogs, and upland bird hunting. So we love being here, and I love coming.
You know, why does a magazine like Gundog come to Pheasant Fest? Do you have an objective?
Well, the objective is to market ourselves, right? To tell people about Gundog Magazine and to tell people that we are the authority when it comes to dog training. And we're here to spread the word and share some of the best dog trainers in the world with you, along with people like Scott Linden, who shares some of the best hunting advice in the world with you. And so we're here just to tell people, and it may not necessarily be about selling subscriptions. It's just we're handing out free magazines right now.
Perfect. And by the way, the check's in the mail.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Your check's in the mail, too. Don't worry.
Tell me, what do people ask you when you're in the booth and they know who you are and they see the magazine and they put two and two together? What are they asking you about?
They ask me about Jones, how Jones is doing. I think that is so cool that people know my dog's name, right?
Yes.
And they tell me, I really enjoy reading your editor's letter. And it's funny because that is... the last thing that I write, and I wait till the last minute, and then I'm like, well, I'm glad somebody reads it, you know? And I think it's cool that they follow the journey of my dogs.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely true. They care more about your dog well, at least in my case, then they care about me. And I'm okay with that.
I love that.
You know, it's funny because I wrote a book and they said 55,000 words. And I wrote 55,000 words and they sent the copy in and they said, well, you didn't write a foreword. And I thought, oh, damn, you slap your forehead and then you think, you know, it's better to wait until you're done.
Right.
To write that page.
I honestly wait to the last minute and get some inspiration and think about what people want to hear about or what's, you know, I'll be having random conversations with people and I'm like, I'm going to write about that in my editor's letter. And
yeah.
I think that's cool. You know?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a touch from me in the magazine and, you know, I appreciate that someone's reading it. So.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
Well, putting a magazine like that together is daunting. I've been a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
I've been an editor, and yep. I'm glad not to be either one anymore. But what are the bigger challenges you face when you're working towards a deadline? We're always on a deadline. There's
yep.
always something that needs to be done tomorrow.
Yep.
What are the milestones you've got in serving us? What do you need to accomplish?
I want to make sure that we are serving our readers with what they want, the content that I feel that they are wanting. Sure, we all have our personal preferences, but I want to make sure that readers are gathering information from that magazine that they can go out and pass on during training to their dog or to, hey, I read this in Gun Dog Magazine. You know, we focus heavily on the DIY dog trainer.
Yeah.
We have some of the best dog trainers in the world writing for us and sharing their intimate knowledge with our readers. In addition, we have the best hunters in the world who are willing to share their how to, where to, this is where you need to go this year. This is how you need to go to be safe. Like, I know I'm speaking with you, but you know, you're very good about sharing with our readers of here's this location, here's how to hunt them, and here's the spot to go have a beer afterwards, right? And that's what we want. This is a very, you know, a communal sport, I would like to say. And it's all about our dogs and it's all about the camaraderie.
It is. And I'm in awe of that for a lot of reasons. I talk to a lot of people out here, for example, on the show floor, and they're always willing to pitch in.
Oh, yes. Always willing. I've found that this community is very open and welcoming.
Yeah.
And it's very, hey, you want to go hunt? And you start talking about your dogs, and you start talking upland hunting and bird dog training, and you're like, let's meet up. Let's go here. And you just make instant friends. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. So how was your season?
I had a very long, but I had a very great season. I hunted many states and many species, and I can't complain.
What was the highlight? Can you boil it down to 12 or 15?
12 or 15, yes, I know. One highlight was I've hunted sage grouse before, but I've never shot one. And this time I hunted with Jones, and he pointed his, we were in Wyoming, and he pointed his first, we had put many miles in the boots, hadn't found any, and we finally found him. And he points, he's on point, and I'm like, you know, we've been hunting for hours, right? And I'm like, that's a real point. Like, get up there. He's on point right now. So I start sprinting, right? And I get all the way up there, and you know when your dog's locked in. In a covey of sage. That was his first sage grouse point covey. They burst from the brush, and I was able to bring one down, and it was my first sage grouse. So my first sage grouse over my dog's first sage grouse point. Man, you should have been in the field because I went crazy.
I bet. The hair standing up on the back of my neck just hearing that story.
You know, I'm like, yes, and I'm just yelling. Man, it was awesome. I'll never forget that moment. And it was funny because I shot one, and I you know how you, the covey bust, and you focus on one bird, and I must have blacked out because I only saw the one bird, and I realized later like 20 birds had busted, but I was like, really? Oh, I only saw one.
My shooting instructor would have said, good.
Yes, yes. So, but you just have, you get in that moment, right, and it was so cool. It was awesome.
I bet. You know, I asked questions like this on social media, and I've written about related topics for you, but so at the end of that day, how did you celebrate with your dog?
You know, that's funny that you say that. We were camped out, and so there's nothing like coming home. We actually fried up the Sharpies on the tailgate, sat around a fire, and of course I shared the sharp tail with Jones and my other dog Lincoln, and we sat there, and I was with a buddy and a good buddy, and we're laughing around the fire, and we're telling the story of the day, right? Reiterating what had happened and how much work we had put in, and then talking about Jones going up there and going on point. And man, what is that's the best part of the day.
It is. And, you know, I found it. Someday I'll write this story for you. I found that the fire is a crucial element.
Yes.
Oh, it is primeval. It's all about caveman days.
Yes.
But you put a fire somewhere and magic happens.
Yep. You get people come around.
It literally.
And you feel it calm, and you feel a sense of just, you know, just a calm sweep go over you. And it was so fun just to sit around the fire, and we talked about the whole day and the dog work, and it was phenomenal.
Well, good on you, and I'm jealous. I haven't shot a sage grouse in 4 or 5 years, I bet. And I may not be able to shoot anymore, you know.
The
Wyoming's
cool.
One of the few places where you can still pull it off.
It was very cool hunting. It was, you know, you see a sage, and, of course, you look for water, and then you just start hiking.
Yeah.
And they had good numbers, I will say that, but we had to put on the miles before we finally found them.
Yeah.
So.
Was there anything special about the habitat where you actually found those birds? Was, for example, a lot of people say, oh, I look for alfalfa.
That's a good question, honestly.
Hard to find in Wyoming in a lot of places. But if you do, you're supposed to focus.
Sure. I will tell you that we were just hunting rolling sagebrush fields. Like, there was no alfalfa. We were definitely looking for water because you're in such vast country, right? Like, where the water is, they're going to be nearby. And we did. And we ended up not finding them in the morning. We had to, you know, we just hiked all morning. And it was funny because we thought we had it. We'd been hiking all morning, and we're kind of, you know, you get to the point where you're a little downtrodden. We're like, should we break for lunch? Well, let's hit one more spot. And we hit that one more spot, and we found them.
Nice. So. Did you have any challenges to shooting a bird that size that appears to be moving slower but is really not?
Oh, I whiffed on the first shot.
Okay.
I did. I whiffed on the first shot. I got him on the second. So
yeah.
Calmed down. That had that split second to calm down and take a good shot in the second. So.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit of pressure to bring a bird down for my bird dog's first sage grouse point, right?
Yeah.
So, but luckily we made it happen.
We have a lot more in common than everybody might think, because you host a TV show and I host a TV show. What's the most interesting part of that for you?
I enjoy it. You know, we get to travel a lot of places, and you know, the show's called Wild Upland. It's a Gundog production, and I basically told them, if we're going to do a TV show, we're going to do it where we're telling the real and the raw of bird hunting and the hits, the misses. And I mean, that first whiff on that sage grouse is on the TV show.
Oh, like, great. So we'll see that on TV.
We're not telling anybody, right? And we show the fantastic dog work. We show dog work. I don't want to call it bad, but working through our learning lessons, right?
Yeah.
We tell people the real and the raw. We're hunting wild birds, and the point of it is to talk about what we're all passionate about, and that's bird dogs.
Well, I'll tell you, I watched an episode not a week ago, and it was one of your later episodes, I think. And I wish I had been that polished in my first or second season.
Well,
you're handling it extremely well.
I appreciate it. I did a little bit of TV with Peterson's Hunting before.
Oh,
this,
all right.
So.
Okay, that helps.
Yes, sure. For sure.
Yeah, you bet. When you're out there doing that sort of thing, are you changing any aspect of your hunting style? Now, we all know, number one, it's not set up.
No.
Number two, though, sometimes you gotta wait for that camera guy to catch up, or the sun's in the wrong direction. You know, what are the biggest hurdles you face?
The only hurdles we face is sometimes we had a lot of hot weather this.
So
we had to hunt really early. Well, of course, you can't hunt until you get camera light, right? Like, we can hunt right at daybreak, but you got to wait for the light to come up a little bit. And then I will say my camera crew is absolutely fantastic. We filmed season two this past season, but season one, one is a hunter, but not quite an upland hunter. And so I had to very much explain to them, hey, when my dog goes on point on a wild bird, you need to start sprinting, because this, you know, these birds aren't going to hold very long. You're not going to be able to get the camera in his face. We're not staging anything. Get up here. And so I had to train them a little bit to let them know when the dog's on point, and please run, please hurry, because this is going to happen quickly.
I'll never forget, I had to bring a guy in from LA once to substitute for one of my shooters, and we get a dog on point, and the first thing he does is pulls out a little version of the what they call a clapper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he's going to run out between the dog and me and do that you know,
no.
clapper thing, and then we're going to fly the bird. Yeah, I had to take him aside after that one, but he did pretty good.
Good. Yeah, my guys are fantastic. I love them. They're very good friends, and they do a good job of videoing, getting the real and the raw. So it's cool.
What is it? What do you like most about that TV show and making it?
Sure.
Tell me what trips your trigger.
Honestly, I enjoy that I get to travel and get my dog on a bunch of birds because. You know, we do that anyways, but now it's like an even bigger excuse to hunt more. And, you know, of course, it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of wear and tear on us and the truck and the dogs. But who wouldn't trade anything in the world to be hunting with your dog all the time, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
I don't care about the cameras. I don't care about killing a bird. I care about taking a hike with my dog.
Yeah, we can fix the rest in post.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know, you are luckier than virtually everybody else. Even when you're not hunting, you're talking about hunting or thinking about hunting or writing about hunting or reading us writing about hunting. What is it? Drill down just a little to what really gets you, what makes the juices flow about bird hunting for you?
It's the dogs. It's the connection that we have with them. And I love reading everyone's stories about, we each have a unique connection with our dog, and everyone's dog is the best dog in the world, right? And that is what I want to share with our readers. And I think everyone wants to read a good dog story. Who doesn't want to read about dogs, right?
Yep.
And so I love that. I love that we tell the story of, you know, training, because that really molds the connection between you and your dog. And then when you go from a pup to out in the field with your bird dog, there's nothing like that story, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is. And I was just talking a moment ago about another aspect of that I've hit on that someday I'll pitch to you. And that is, we, especially in the West, but everywhere, you know, think about the grouse woods and the stone walls and things. We are walking around in places that are full of history.
Oh, so cool.
Whether it's petroglyphs, old sodbuster dugout homes, or like I said, an apple orchard in the New England area. Those are bits of history that most people might read about, but never experience.
Oh, I know. Sometimes I think about it when I'm out hunting. Like, I do a lot of big game hunting as well, and I'm looking out in these vast landscapes, and I'm like, there may have never been another human to touch where we are right now.
Yeah.
Like, honestly. Seriously.
Yep.
You know, and for a lot of times we come across a lot of Indian ruins, or even out in the prairies of Montana, the old desolate, you know, homesteads that are out there. And think of the stories that were there.
Exactly.
We'll never know, and I think that's awesome. And the places that we get to see are so unique, and just that's a part of it all.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I remember I was in the sand hills in Nebraska trying to find a sharptail, and I realized that in 3 days of hunting, once I stepped off the road, there was no sign of humanity.
Isn't that crazy?
None. On the third day, I found an old bed spring.
Wow.
Other than that, nothing.
Think about that.
3 days.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Just think of what happened on that landscape, you know, from the Native Americans to the homesteaders who made their way across the West, like the history that we'll never know about.
Yep, that's for
cool
sure.
Enough.
I'm Scott Linden. That's Callie Parmley from Gundog Magazine. This is the Upland Nation podcast. We're on the floor of Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic here in Sioux Falls, having a great time. And I'll tell you, Callie, I don't know about you, but I had a hard time moving around out there. It's so
packed.
You could say crowded, or you could say popular. I'll say popular.
That's a good idea. Popular. This show is filled with hardcore bird hunters, that's for sure.
And yeah.
I was surprised Friday. I wasn't expecting to be so busy, but it was slammed too.
Yeah. You know, we were here once about 5-6 years ago, and it was, they pulled out the stops. The whole city was here for us. And it's a surprise that it took so long to get back.
Yes.
Based on that.
I know, because it's, you know, you'd think South Dakota, this is the pheasant capital of the world.
Yeah.
People I've actually had a lot of people tell me they've driven in from Minnesota, driven 2 or 3 hours today to be here, and I think that's awesome.
I think the record for me is 11 hours. Somebody said, oh, I drove all the way here just to see you. No, not really. No, but But it's dedication times
it
two.
It is. This is one of the best shows in the world. Not only are we raising money for conservation, but we got all the brand new products out here and the dog products that you need and the Upland gear. And let's just say I walk away with spending way too much money at this show.
Well, have you seen anything really interesting? That's the trick.
A ton of new bird bags out there. I'm loving all the dog kennels. And honestly, bunch of new shotguns that are dropping, and so this is the place to be if you want to load up on Upland gear.
It's kind of like Christmas all over again.
Oh,
in a way. There are you're right.
That's
I've
so
seen
cool.
way more new shotgun you brands know, than I've ever seen.
Way newer shotguns, but you know what else? What I love, like, of course, the Upland gear, we all load up on that, but the lifestyle gear.
Tell me.
So that we can all just rep our dogs and our birds that we love 24/7 a year. I love that over at I've. Over at Bird Dog of the Day and getting all the stickers and then all the hats with all of our stuff on it. I think that's cool.
Yep, absolutely.
I may have picked up a hoodie with a setter on it. I'm just saying.
Well, we are going to be back after a brief commercial message with Callie Parmley of Gundog Magazine. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation Podcast. Don't go away.
Coming up, we'll take a trip to a Kansas town that is ideal as a headquarters for your walk-in hunting adventure. It's coming up right here on the Upland Nation Podcast after this word from LandTrust.com. Hey, they got properties in Kansas, among other places. It's kind of like, you don't have to knock on the door, and it's quite affordable, and on a day-to-day basis, you can obtain access to private, well-managed land for wild birds. So if you're making a long trip and you want to make sure you have somewhere to go that's kind of vetted and scouted for you, go to landtrust.com. Shop around over there, open a free account, and see what they have to offer you and your dog. You know, that's why we go. Landtrust.com. And if you want to shoot better, change your choke tubes. Yeah, if you haven't patterned your gun, that's one thing. You first ought to do that. Second, you ought to take a look at some new choke tubes to help those patterns. Reduce the number of big gaping holes in your pattern. As Scott Trulock says, if you can look at a pattern paper or a pattern board and find bird-sized holes in your pattern, well, no wonder you're missing. Okay, that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. Learn more about why good choke tubes are good shooting at TrulockChokes.com.
A rare break in the crowd here at Upland Nation Podcast on the floor of the Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. It was actually a space of about 10 feet with nobody in it in front of us, which is remarkable. Callie Parmley joins me from Gundog Magazine. Callie, let's talk a little bit about our seasons.
Sure.
Mine was abbreviated. I won't bore you with the details, but yours was full of excitement and new stuff.
It was.
Other states you hadn't been to yet?
Not necessarily hadn't been to, but some repeats and some new species and some new states and some favorites as well.
Tell me about the new species, besides your sage grouse.
I shouldn't say new species. I should say, like, I went to Oregon and hunted roosters in Oregon. Like,
yeah,
I've never
and I'm jealous, by the way.
Yes, I've never hunted roosters.
You were that close and you didn't call me.
I know, I'm sorry.
But I was probably in Nevada anyway.
Yeah, I know. Nevada is on my next bucket list state, and I live in Utah, and I don't know why I haven't been there yet. So.
Yeah. You know, do you... I cannot believe how hardcore Utah's chucker hunters are.
It is.
They're just at a rung above the rest of us.
We're a little crazy, but that's all right.
Yeah. Is there some reason? Is it because there's so few of you, you have to, make up for all the others who aren't there?
I guess so. I always say we're out for revenge on chucker.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I can't tell this story on a family show, or I'll tell it to you later, but... do you get to do much at home?
I'll be honest with you, and I know this sounds bad, but I only got to hunt Utah about 3 times this year. So I just do a lot of traveling with the TV show and the magazine. And I love when I am home because I can hunt right out my back door and I can sleep in my own bed at night, right?
Yeah.
And there's something to say for finding birds, right close to home.
Absolutely. There is that. Other new species you saw this year you were able to hunt?
I hunted Cali quail in Washington with a friend over his Vizslas and my Jones, and we had a great time up there. Of course, I've hunted California quail, just not in Washington.
Yeah.
So we had a really good time up there, and he's got some great dogs. And I was in Montana for roosters and sharpies. I was in Nebraska. I do like a friend pheasant camp every year.
Yeah.
And we did that, of course, this year. I just got back from Arizona hunting Merns down in Arizona, of course. So
everybody but me.
I know. That is a hunt that I plan on doing every year.
Great.
It is just fun. It kind of mimics chukar hunting, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But there's those dang oak trees that get in the way.
Get right in the way, right?
Yeah.
But it's perfect for working a young dog.
Yes.
Want to talk about fantastic dog work on those birds, that is where to go.
Well, you know, I'm obsessing on that because I am selfish enough to think I might learn enough to actually shoot a bird when I'm down there.
Yes.
But what is it about Merns in particular that are so beneficial for a young dog?
Absolutely. Well, I will never claim to be a Merns expert yet, but I have hunted them a few times, and they hold very well and very tight, and so dogs tend to run over them. So I'll give you an example. Jones hunted them last year, and that was it. And so this year we go out, and it took about 4 coveys before he started pointing them.
Yeah.
Yeah, at one point we were walking, and we both walked right past a tree, and he runs past, and as soon as I walk past, the covey busts from the tree, like 20 birds. I'm like, really, Jones? You didn't smell those birds right there? And so you know how that goes. But kept hunting him, kept getting more contacts, and by the end he was slamming on point.
So yeah.
Couldn't be more proud of him. But I just kept saying, we just keep going because he's going to figure it out. Birds make a bird dog.
You know, I had a discussion that was related to that, and it was actually an Arizona-based discussion about humidity and dogs' abilities to scent.
That's interesting.
For whatever reason, that is one of those places where it's harder for the dog.
It is, and I will also tell you this. This was a big factor, too. The wind was absolutely ripping.
Ah.
And he ran through 4 birds and 4 coveys, and as soon as the wind stopped ripping, he pointed them.
Yeah.
So that has to tell you, like, 30-mile-per-hour winds are not helping scenting conditions.
No, you think about it, you know, and we've all seen, in fact, Rick and Ronnie Smith have a little demo on one of their videos of a little smoke-emitting device of some sort, and then they get up in a man lift or something, and they show where that smoke is going. It's eye-opening.
Yes.
It really is.
It really is. It was kind of cool to see that, because it was absolutely ripping, and as soon as it went down to a light breeze, he started pointing birds.
Yeah.
So it just tells you how the weather can really affect scenting conditions.
They're pretty cooperative. If you do get a point, though, they'll hold for you to walk in and kick them up.
It is so funny. They hold very well, but they fly very strange.
Huh.
So we probably found 8 coveys, but probably only got a shoot at 2 of them because it's very strange how they fly. They don't just fly straight out. They kind of popcorn and they dive and they dip. I literally had one bird out of the covey. Instead of flying out, it came at my face.
Oh, my God.
It was very strange. The Merns. This was Merns.
I had a mountain quail do that. I was on a beaver dam trying to get over to my dog on the other side where he was pointing the edge of the creek. And before I could get there, one of the pair went straight up in the air. The other one came right at me.
You could have caught it with your hand.
I had to duck out of self-defense.
Mountain quail's the last species of quail I need, so.
Well, you come our way.
Yes.
I got the place for you.
Okay.
I got 2 places for you.
Yeah, it was cool.
And they're not the traditional places. That's the other thing.
What a beautiful bird. I've never even seen one on the wing, so I would love to come hunt them.
Yeah, it's a funny bird because where I hunt them, they run with the valley quail.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. And to a great degree, especially a guy who's a little colorblind, I don't know what it is until the dog brings it back.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they fly pretty fast to recognize them on the wing.
Yes.
Know?
Yeah. So. And if they're going away,
well,
I got enough problems with that. So, you know, in all of this, and you get to hunt with a lot of people who are much smarter than me and maybe slightly smarter than you.
Definitely.
What have you learned about hunting, whether it's strategy, tactics, planning, you know, what are the lessons in your notebook that you want to share with us?
I love learning. I love hunting with friends who are way more experienced than me and just listening and questioning their every move and what are we doing. And I had the opportunity to hunt with like Susanna and Ronnie Smith in Texas just earlier in February. And you know, they're some of the best dog trainers in the world. And so we're walking the field and I'm picking their brain about dog training and what they're doing and how they're handling their dog. And I'm just trying to take it all in as I can, you know, because you got to learn from the best.
You know, I joke about it, but it's true. We need to be better students of our sport.
Absolutely.
And sometimes I kind of wish I did carry a notebook.
Oh, 100%. I would 100% always say, be humble and listen. You can never stop learning. Like,
well, you're one of the lucky ones who got to hunt, I don't know how far south you were. You weren't, maybe not on the King Ranch, but you were
I was not. I was actually in the, with Steve Snell and Susanna and Ronnie. We were up near Amarillo.
And so tell me about a great Texas quail hunt. Describe it. You get up in the morning, and then what?
Well, to be honest with you, this is my first Texas quail hunt.
Yeah.
So we had to wake up very early because it was very hot.
Yeah.
Of course, we're in Texas, right? Yeah. Now, luckily, we weren't in so much humidity since we were up in the panhandle, but we were up early because of how hot it was, and we had to stop hunting by like 11:30
every
day.
Yeah, yeah.
The scenting conditions were not good because it was so dry.
Yeah.
But it was really phenomenal to see their dogs work because they're very much quail dogs, right?
Yeah.
So they were running pointers, but they were close. The pointers were working close because they recognized that these bobwhite are holding like crazy.
Yeah.
And we had many times actually where we would be standing there talking to each other. We had a hard time finding birds. The scenting wasn't great. We'd be standing there talking to each other for 5 minutes, and a quail would get up. That's how tight they were holding. And we would look at each other like, we've been standing here for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think if you look in the dictionaries are big piles of paper, by the way, everybody. And inside are definitions of words. If you looked into the H section under hunker, there'd be a picture of a quail.
Oh, it was crazy. And but it tells you also how bad the scenting was because the dogs are near us and they're not smelling them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, singles are hard to point out, but we still found plenty of birds and we had great opportunities and got to see phenomenal dog work.
Yeah, and a close working and pointer, that doesn't belong in the same sentence either.
Not normally, those dogs know what they're hunting. They are experienced quail dogs, and they know the birds are going to be, I'm going to run over them unless I take my time and cover this closely.
Yeah. My first wire hair got me so worried about how he would range that I finally went to the guru of wire hairs at the time, and I said, I'm really freaked out here. Why is he going way out there and way out there? He says, there's no birds in between you and there.
Makes sense.
These dogs have learned that there are birds.
There are birds.
And they're right here.
Yes. It was really cool to see. And I love that I got to run Jones with him because he can learn from those dogs.
Yeah.
It was really cool to see.
You think he learned something?
I hope so.
Do you think it was because he was watching out of the corner of his eye as they're going over there? How does a dog learn from another dog?
Well, he honors very well.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate in that. I didn't have to do anything crazy. He honors very well. And so I think when another dog goes on point and find those birds and the other dog that is honoring, he may not be sure what he's honoring for yet, but when those birds bust, he all of a sudden realizes.
Yeah.
And he gets some scent in his mouth or in his nose and he realizes, oh, that's what that dog found.
Two
that's what I'm looking
plus
for.
Two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He made did the mouth.
Yes. It was cool.
Tell me about the terrain down there. We don't get to go. We'll never get to go where you just went.
I was in the panhandle and it was very much like rolling, beautiful plains.
Yeah.
Very Texas. Chula Pant, whatever, what are they called? Cactus, not cactus, but anyways.
Yeah.
But beautiful, beautiful rolling plains and very much look like Texas. So.
Grass?
Grass, yep.
Grassy.
I would say it was like knee-high grass.
Really?
A little shorter, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually right where we were hunting, right where the wildfires are right now.
Oh, so God.
I sure hope the ranch is okay.
Yeah.
And it was wild birds. That. It was beautiful. And it was we were fortunate enough that Steve and Ronnie and Susanna, they have a lease down there and they invited us to come down, and which I was happy because I have never got to spend time afield with Ronnie and Susanna yet. They write for me for our readers. And it was fantastic to get a hunt with them.
I bet. Yeah.
Great people.
We've almost done that in Montana once.
Highly recommend.
Timing just never worked.
And I loved hearing their stories from guiding for 30 years down at the King Ranch.
I bet.
It was pretty cool.
I bet.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, so put on your vests. Let's go through your pockets.
Gear list.
Yeah. And not the usual suspects. We all know what they are, right, everybody? Okay. But is there anything in there that you bring along? I don't care if it's a good luck charm or it's something that you've learned the hard way, but what do you carry in?
I'm trying to think of a good luck charm. I don't necessarily know if I have that, but I'm very, we're all pretty OCD, right?
Yeah,
about our gear
yeah.
we have and our how we put our vests on. I'm definitely one of those. I always carry wire cutters. I'd rather, yeah. I have not, knock on wood, had an incident, but I would rather have them than yeah. if an incident did occur.
Yep.
I always carry a Leatherman
yep.
in case we have an unfortunate incident with a porcupine.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I ran into a product this year that I want to find, and I found it on Amazon, and it was, I don't know how to explain it. You put, when you're crossing a barbed wire fence,
yes.
you put it against the,
yes.
the pole so you can
yeah.
easily climb over the.
It creates a step.
You know what I'm
you.
Talking about? The step.
Yeah, I do.
Like, and I don't know the official name, I'm sorry, but yeah. it was fantastic, and it weighed like 2 ounces, and I
yeah.
will be buying one.
Oh, and by the way, there's another one brand new this year on the market right here in this building. It's two little C things
that
will squeeze your barbed wire strands and make
that.
A big hole for you in the middle.
That was cool. I saw
I can't
that
wait
product.
To field test
yes,
that.
Yes, for sure.
I have a good luck charm, and I'm glad I bring it. Not that it helps my shooting, but I take a carabiner mm-hmm. and I put all my long-gone dogs'
oh,
collar tags on it.
Well, I will tell you that my first bird dog is... He is still with us right now, and so I don't have dog collars yet, but when he goes, he will be with me every day.
There you go.
So.
Yeah. Well, if you wanted to leave us with a little bit more advice from, you know, whether you stole it from Ronnie and Susanna or somebody else, or you just learned by trial and error, mm-hmm. what kind of hunting advice could you give us?
I would say enjoy your time. Don't focus on shooting a limit. Focus on hunting with your dog.
Yeah.
Focus on being on in the moment with him. And this is about him or her. This isn't about you. Right?
Yeah.
And enjoy it. Enjoy every moment because, unfortunately, they don't live as long as us. And that's awful. But enjoy the moment with them.
That's Callie Parmley from Gun Dog Magazine. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation Podcast. You know, I don't think we could top that. I think we're going to end with that advice from you, and hopefully everybody's paid attention to it. What a great show. What a great chance to talk with you. Sure appreciate your help educating all of us a little bit through the magazine and the TV show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Scott, for having me.
You're welcome.
Whether we're in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, or right here at the home place, MidwayUSA.com makes it all possible. They carry just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors. This time of year, if you're looking for camping supplies, hey, maybe some military surplus, and of course, all sorts of shooting gear from ammo to gun care stuff. It's all right there. You know, if you sign up for emails or text notifications from MidwayUSA.com, you'll get 10% off your next order. Start a big pile in your shopping cart, sign up, and then get that 10% discount at MidwayUSA.com. And while you're signing up for emails, go to SageAndBreaker.com. That's where you will find out about the very rare sales they have and all the new products before everybody else. Lifetime warranty on everything they sell, and they make it all, and it is heirloom quality. Hey, midnight camo hats are now up on the site if you're looking for a new piece of headgear. It's all at sageandbreaker.com. And so, along the lines of shooting better, think about your relationship with your gun muzzle and the target, and whether a colored light pipe from HiVisSights.com might help. Well, you know, it doesn't matter what style you're shooting. If you're shooting, you're trying to create a relationship between your gun muzzle and your target. And sometimes a right sight will help. They make magnetic, screw attach, and plain barrel sights even I can install. Take a look at their entire line and see if something there might be helping you shoot a little bit better. HiVisSights.com. HiVisSights.com. Well, this week on the road trip, we're headed for Western Kansas. Osborne, Kansas is the town where we headquartered to make a couple TV shows. Got to explore a lot of the walk-in country out there, courtesy of our friends at the Department of Wildlife, Fish, and Parks in Kansas. They guided us to some of the better spots, but what I learned because I hung around for a few days afterwards is there is just a whole bunch of walk-in country there. Get the hunting atlas at the Kansas website and then head out for Osborne, Kansas. Funny story, we were getting ready to shoot on the first day, and we let the dogs out to stretch their legs while we put the batteries in and loaded up and got the gear on and couldn't find Flick. Son of a gun, we all started looking, and sure, there he was at the classic location. He was up the hill a little bit and off the road, of course, on point in a plum thicket. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, never ignore a plum thicket in Kansas. You never know what might come out of it. In this case, it was a bobwhite quail, but right along the side in the deeper grass, ringnecks. And it's all available in Osborne, Kansas. All sorts of crop variety, all sorts of fallow fields, woodlands, and shelter belts. Yeah, and one of the few places where they still have their own dedicated Boy Scout lodge and meeting place. If you're looking for somewhere new to go, take a look at Osborne, Kansas. And we're brought to you in part by ESPAmerica.com. Good to see you folks at Pheasant Fest, and congratulations. I believe I hear a little puppy in the background when we talk anymore. You know, got taken to school on hearing protection devices from my friend Jeff at ESPAmerica.com. The reason these ESP products are so much superior when it comes to wind noise, where the microphone is located on your hearing protection device. They put it up in a little spot where it's tucked behind your own ear's anatomy so that you got a windbreak already on your head. And then they add patented digital software. Hey, it works. I was out on the Clays Range in a windy day not 4 or 5 days ago. And boy, I could hear everything I needed to hear except for those gunshots. Learn more about how hearing protection devices work and why you need them at ESPAmerica.com. And use them the next time you visit Mid Valley Clays and Shooting School, whether you're just there to shoot for fun on all the clay target games, or if you're taking a lesson from one of the hunting instructors who also know a little bit about clay target shooting. Or if you're shopping for a new shotgun, they are sub-gauge central. MidValleyClays.com has a large assortment of 20, 28, and 410 always in stock. And if they don't have it, Dave Fiedler, the gun guru, will find it for you. Call him before you make your decisions. You might be surprised at the insights he can offer you. And then once you're ready to buy, don't forget, he can ship anywhere, anytime. Stay in touch when you're shopping for a new shotgun at MidValleyClays.com. Well, now is when I thank you for being such nice people and contributing to our discussion. Appreciate every one of you who does in one or more ways. Appreciate all of you who rate or review the Upland Nation podcast. And of course, thank you to our sponsors, Sage & Breaker, Pointer Shotguns, Purina Pro Plan Sport, ESP America, Mid Valley Clays, Trulock Chokes, Midway USA, Land Trust, and Hi-Viz Shooting Systems. Thanks, Callie Parmley. You can watch Callie on the Outdoor Channel in Wild Upland, and then, of course, every other month at Gundog Magazine. And thank you for being such kind and attentive listeners. I sure appreciate your feedback. I'm Scott Linden. We'll see you next week. Until then, maybe I'll see you at the range.